Bob Giffer is a partner in Sullivan & Cromwell's New York office with overall responsibility for the firm's litigation practice. He is a member of Sullivan & Cromwell's management committee and a co-editor, together with his partners Sergio Galvis and Werner Ahlers, of The Guide to Corporate Crisis Management, published by Latin Lawyer. In this podcast, Bob and Paul Holmes, the CEO of North American Operations at the global communications firm Finsbury, discuss communication strategies for corporate crises.
So, Paul, lawyers tend to be pretty good communicators, but, we often need to hire litigation consultants, PR consultants, to help us in our big-ticket litigations. Why should we do that?
You know, Bob, that's a great question. I've always said that lawyers and litigators like you in particular are very good storytellers. And I think that's something we have in common. But I think it's also a consideration that when there is a high-stakes litigation or a significant enforcement action that a company is about to face, there are many different audiences to consider. And I think it's beneficial and it behooves companies to bring in a communications advisor who can work very closely with the legal team to look at those audiences and help determine whether they need to receive a message about what's happening and how that message is delivered and the language that is used to deliver that message.
What do you see as some of the biggest mistakes that companies make when they're handling a crisis from a communication standpoint?
You know, I think they tend to compartmentalize crises sometimes. It's particularly true of large, complex companies. And it's also true, I think, of companies in industries that may not be routinely exposed to regulatory scrutiny, so the less regulated industries. And I think where they compartmentalize it and don't have different stakeholders sitting around the same table preparing for an event and for that event to go public, there's a significant risk that there will be a misstep, either that the communications team will say something that exposes the company to additional legal risk, or that something will be said in the court of law that really falls flat in the court of public opinion.
Now, you and I have always talked about the need to be very integrated and have the communications team and the legal team integrated, and I agree fully with that. And as we both know, oftentimes I would go into court in a major case that we were working on, and I would run the points that I was going to make by you, and you would always have a press statement ready to go, which was consistent with what I was saying in court.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. I mean, I'm a big believer with messaging and communications that you have to be confident in your communications, but you have to be controlled and disciplined. Less is often more in communications.
Well, that's certainly true at the beginning of a crisis, because at the beginning of a crisis, you don't know all the facts.
Right.
And if a company comes out and makes all of these exculpatory statements, and it turns out that no one's done the background work to make sure that those exculpatory statements are true, you know, the statements will be quoted back at you by the prosecutors, the plaintiff's lawyers, and then the press.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've seen several cases where you know, the principals in issues that are highly risky have given interviews in the press. And what they say in those interviews ends up quoted in a securities class action or a plaintiff's lawsuit. And it's also true of social media. And the employees in a company often who are working on the social media feeds, they can be subpoenaed, they can be deposed, they can be called into court as witnesses. So you really need to have a very disciplined approach to communicating, and you need to have your advisors trusting each other and understanding the various areas of communication that become necessary.
One of the issues that I've often seen when we deal with crisis situations is the fact that a company and its executives and its board can't expect the situation to turn around, you know, in a week or two or three. Sometimes it takes, you know, 6 months, a year, multiple years in order to get the the situation sort of turned around and the crises put to bed. Obviously, the bigger the crises, the longer it will take. There's such a tendency on the part of folks to want to come out initially with that denial, that strong, assertive statement, we did nothing wrong. And, you know, I think my experience and your experience has often been you have to sort of build back your credibility slowly and not try to win the whole communications, you know, war in the first couple of skirmishes. You've got to try to do it, you know, over time.
Yeah, that's absolutely the case. I think...
And the bigger the problem, obviously, the longer it's going to take and the more you have to be measured in your response.
Yeah, I think what audiences need to know initially is that you are conscious that there is a problem, you are seeking to resolve the problem, and you are doing what you can to ensure that it doesn't happen again. And then you have to have a very clear and compelling top-line message that you repeat and repeat and repeat over time. It has to be your mantra, almost.
It has to be a simple message so it gets communicated to all the various stakeholders that you're dealing with, and if it gets too complicated or too defensive, you've got a problem. Now, let's suppose you have a situation where a company clearly has done something wrong. Now, to what extent should a company admit to that wrongdoing publicly, given the fact that obviously those statements are going to be used against it by regulators and by plaintiff's lawyers?
Well, I don't think there's one answer to that. I think that's a discussion that has to be had with the legal team, with the company, and with its other advisors. You know, there are situations where, for reputational reasons and for commercial reasons, you may want to admit early on to wrongdoing and seek a settlement. You know, there are other situations where you may determine that you need to fight it out to a certain point or right to the end. You know, I've worked on cases that have gone all the way to the Supreme Court before they were resolved with a Supreme Court ruling. I've worked on other cases that did not come to court. Very many of them, the majority, do not come to court.
Let's suppose you have a case involving an international company. So it's got a headquarters in São Paulo, and then it has operations in Europe, and maybe it has operations in the United States, and there's a big crisis that's a global crisis. Does that make your job even more difficult?
It makes it more complex, I think, for two reasons. One is that it's, you know, when there are the more players are involved, and as we've found on several of the big cases we've worked on together, actually, if you have a small, cohesive team, you are much more likely to succeed and get to an outcome. The larger the team, the more dispersed the team.
We don't want to have a communications team working in São Paulo, another one in New York, and another one in London, and maybe another team in Asia, just on the communication side.
So you may have a series of communications firms who are involved, just as you may have several law firms involved. But you need a coordinating center that determines the strategy and determines the message. And then the others can execute on that. I think the two risks that arise, one is that something that is said in one market spills over into another market and attracts regulatory attention or the attention of plaintiff lawyers in a different country. That's a serious challenge these days where no news is local. And the second thing is, I think as a communicator, you have to be attuned to cultural differences in how communications works in different markets and take that into account.
To what extent has social media and the internet made your job as a litigation communications consultant more difficult? I mean, one of the things that we've seen in cases is that the more high profile the case, the more the internet traffic, the more the websites are writing about, you know, things.
You know, I think you have to choose, you have to pick your battles and where you fight them. And I think you're absolutely right that there is more noise out there, but often it is just noise. And social media can amplify, you're absolutely right, it can amplify criticism or pressure. But ultimately, if you play the long game and if you are looking at your strategic objective and working towards achieving that objective, you can help your client filter out some of that noise.
Thank you for listening to S&C Critical Insights. For more information about our practice, please visit us on the web at www.solcrom.com.